Evening. Thank you so much for having me back, Melvin, and it's wonderful to be in the studio with you.
I'm so glad to have you, and I was just thinking today when you agreed to come on, after you agreed to come on, I thought, well, the next time I introduce Annie, I'm just going to have to say, well, she's one of our regulars on this program, and which would be good. And Joseph Logan Bear used to be one of our fairly regular guests, and even I think you hosted once or twice, didn't you?
Yes, a number of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And I hadn't seen, I was wondering, you know, what you were doing, so I'm glad to see you again, too, after all this time. And I'm glad that you're still with the Young Shakespeare Players. Can you bring us up to date a little bit on the Young Shakespeare Players?
Yes, we have a very busy year this year. We just finished Richard II with three casts of young people. And then just last Saturday, we started work on Shaw's great early masterpiece, Caesar and Cleopatra. And we'll have, it looks like, three separate casts of young people doing that as well. And then that will perform at the end of June. And then this summer, we have both The Tempest and Hamlet. Mm-hmm. So if you know any young people between 7 or 18, have them join us for those this summer. And those will both perform in August. So come and see both of those.
Mm. And Annie, are you going to be involved, or are you involved right now in anything that's coming up?
We have so much coming up. It is a very exciting season. We are ambitiously doing two shows this summer. So I am directing Love's Labor's Lost out at Madison Country Day School, where we've been since summer of 2020. And that will open on August 9th and run for 2 weekends. But before that, the Madison Shakespeare Company is attempting a feat never before seen, which is staging a full-length play. They're doing Dido, Queen of Carthage, at the Wonderground at the Madison Children's Museum. So that is 1 weekend only at the end of June, opening June 28th. And they do have some rain dates, just in case, since they only have 1 weekend. But that's really going to be an exciting production outside on the Wonderground, using all of the playground equipment, the big ship there. People will be climbing all over things. It's fantastic. And as a preview to that, we are at the Children's Museum tomorrow night, Friday night, doing a number of selections. The theme of the Adult Swim tomorrow night is Slumber Party. So we've redone some of the scenes that we've done before to fit the Slumber Party theme. And some of them fit it more easily than others. Some of them just involve perhaps putting characters in their pajamas. But we will be there at the Children's Museum tomorrow night. So there is a lot going on with Madison Shakespeare Company right now.
Yeah, as always, there's always a lot going on with Madison Shakespeare Company. I mentioned Reader's Digest a moment ago. Are we going to give you a taste of the Reader's Digest? Because the other day, a young lady that I know, I suppose she's around 20, 21, 22, she had never heard of the Reader's Digest. I couldn't believe it. That anybody born in this country and had arrived at the age of 20 or 18 or 17 or anything didn't know about Reader's Digest. So I thought I'd remind some of you of what the Reader's Digest is about. And there's so much in the Reader's Digest every month that it's hard to really give a good compendium that gives you a good idea of what there is in it. But there's a lot of humor, so we're going to start off with a column called Life in These United States. And Annie J. and Joseph Logan Bear will be reading those. These are tidbits that readers send in to the Reader's Digest. Life in These United States.
My great aunt looked confused when I told her that my daughter was 18 months old. Oh, she said. I thought she was a year and a half. But Aunt Marie, I said, 18 months and a year and a half are the same. She shrugged. What do I know? I never had kids.
And that was sent in by Joel Brill of Northridge, California.
Sorry I wasn't listening when you were talking about your dog. I was busy looking at in my phone for a picture of my superior dog.
I just have to say that reminds me of one of my professors in undergrad. He told one of the PhD candidates that the professor's cats were intellectually superior to one of his students' cats.
Oh, no.
And he was serious. I mean, he just dead-eye looked at this young man.
So what comes next?
doctor's office called to let my husband know that the results from his blood test came back and he was just fine. That didn't suit my husband.
What's my cholesterol level? He asked.
Mr. Crocker, you are just fine, insisted the nurse.
Still, I'd like you to mail me the results.
A few days later, he received a postcard from the doctor's office. It read, quote, Mr. Crocker, you are just fine.
And that was sent in by Kathy Crocker of Fort Worth, Texas. And now we hear from something that Lynette Combs sent in from Norfolk, Virginia.
On a Facebook page for beginning artists, one asked, any suggestions for painting dogs? Another responded, wait till they're asleep. Okay. I seem to be getting all the dog.
Right,
the
you have a real dog theme. Yeah. My goodness. You're getting pigeonholed. Living in rural Minnesota, I find driving through crowded Minneapolis difficult. I have trouble figuring out when to turn and in what lane to be in, I complained to my grandson. His wife could commiserate. I know what you mean, she said. I never know at which cornfield to turn when we come to visit you.
Oh, me. Well, why don't we go over to another section? Let's see. That should be on page 22. Page 18. This is a section that's still there. I remember when I moved back to the United States from Spain and picked up my first issue of the Reader's Digest, I noticed that there were some of the titles, they had sort of changed them. There was somewhere I was sure there used to be an article like the something or the something, and they had taken it away. That seems to be a trend in modern American English to get rid of articles, prepositions, and sometimes it sounds awful to me. For example, the first thing I noticed was everybody was saying police instead of the police. And they would say the word police instead of policeman, policewoman, or police officer. They would say, a police came to my door. And I thought, why are they talking like that? Sounds horrible. And then they never say the police. And I pointed out to somebody once, I said, but look at Sting. You know, he's the group that he performed with for so long until he went solo. And it's called The Police.
With the article.
Right. Maybe today it would just be police.
Well, but it's not. And people are saying, I play piano. You play piano? What game is that? I've never heard of that. I mean, do you mean you play the piano or the guitar or the violin? I mean, I can say if you just say, you're going to play nurse or play doctor and nurse or something like that, but you're going to play piano? What game is that? I've never heard of it before.
I've heard it suggested that philosophy only became possible with the development of the definite article, because beforehand you just had good. That's good. And then but after the definite article came along, you could talk about the good.
That's so interesting, because one of my best friends from undergrad was from Turkey. And he said the hardest thing, it perfect English, he said the most difficult thing for him in conversation, not so much in writing, but in conversation, was knowing when to say the and when not to. Mm. And he said, there's no rule. He said, with all these other things, there's a rule. And he said, but in English, when to say the and when not to say the, there's no rule. And it really made me overthink it for about 6 months of my life. Mm.
Well, I suppose there is a rule. It's just that there are a few things that the rule doesn't apply to, that's just the way we say it. I mean,
right. When you grow up speaking English, when you grow up just saying things a certain way and hearing your parents saying them a certain way, or your teachers and everybody else, you don't think about it. But that the thing really got me for a few months. Mm. When something's pointed out to you, you notice it everywhere. And I really started noticing the and lack thereof, and it really.
Yeah, my students in Spain used to tell me sometimes that. They would say, you know, English is easy. The only thing hard about English is the pronunciation. But understanding the language, the grammar, is very easy because English doesn't have any grammar. It's just, it just has a lot of exceptions. Oh, me. And I just found, I was so impressed with the Spanish students. I just thought they were just so intelligent, because they would pick up English just like that. And I found out that I was known as a hard teacher. In fact, one of my students that I met years later, and she said that when she became a teacher, she modeled herself after me, which made me feel very good. But and I point out, you know, she was a very good student and so forth and so on. And I said, well, I guess you found English easy. She said, no, English was hard and you were so hard. But, you know, she learned English.
Well, my mom is the worst speller on the face of the planet.
Really?
I mean, truly no contest. It just, she excels in it. And when spell check became a thing, she was delighted. You know, Microsoft Word and you could just type something in. But her spelling is so bad that her typing is not even close. So she still has to yell from the other room, how do you spell whatever it is? Because it's not even close. Microsoft Word just says, we can't help you, man. And it's the silliest thing, because one of the silliest things I've ever heard is people say, oh, well, if you read a lot, you're a good speller. That's so insulting. It's not true. And she read all the time. I mean, she was a voracious reader. It just, it's one of those things. It's like being good at music, being good at language. There are things that just click in your head better. But yeah, the English spell, she'd always say, why does English spell it that way? I'm like, I don't know. You've been speaking it longer than I have. You tell me.
Maybe she should study the history of the language.
There you go.
And you know, after she spends 2 or 3 years doing the, I can forget what we call that. I'd do that in Spanish. You know, you take, in Spanish, we would do both. We would start with classical Latin, then we go to vulgar Latin, and then variations in vulgar Latin, and then old Spanish, and then pre-modern Spanish, and then modern Spanish. And then we'd also have to do it the other way, start with the Spanish word and go back to see if we can go back to the classical Latin. And that was considered, I know in English, departments, was considered the most difficult course, the history of the English language.
Oh, sure.
I never really talked to anybody about it in Spanish. But it was people didn't necessarily love it. So let's go back to Reader's Digest. There's a section called Quotable Quotes, which was there a long time ago when I was a child, and it's still there. I was glad to see it's still there.
Was it called The Quotable Quotes when you were younger?
No, I think it was Quotable Quotes, because here it's Quotable Quotes. I mean, The Quotable Quotes, I think that would be something different. But anyway, why don't we start with Lily Tomlin. Oh, she is funny.
Lily Tomlin says, all my life I've wanted to be somebody, but I see now I should have been more specific.
And then we go to somebody named Megan Cox Gordon. Do you know this person?
I am not familiar.
An author?
I am not either.
What did she say?
To read aloud to someone you love is the simplest of gifts and one of the greatest.
I agree. And Margaret Mead, of course. Have you heard of Margaret Mead?
Yes,
of course.
Oh, absolutely.
I am so happy.
This is one of the most famous quotes, actually. A lot of people have this as their email signature. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world.
Yes.
Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has.
Yes. And you get your wish.
I do. It's the rough side of the mountain that's easiest to climb. The smooth side doesn't have anything for you to hang on to.
And that was?
Aretha Franklin.
Aretha Franklin. I was surprised. I didn't expect her to say something like that.
I always wonder with quotes whether these people actually said any of them, because there's so many misattributed quotes.
Yeah.
We just started a Shaw play, but so there's a very famous quote of Shaw's. You know, you look at things that are and ask why. I look at things that never were and ask why not.
Yeah,
and that was Shaw, and it's actually the Satan in the serpent in Back to Methuselah who says it, but Robert Kennedy quoted it so frequently that is often attributed to him because. He always attributed it to Shaw. He never tried to take ownership of it.
Uh-huh.
But he just said it so much that now it's often attributed to him.
Oh, yeah.
It was written some decades before he started using it.
Yeah.
Well, and it's really interesting sometimes when you start to go back farther and farther and farther, because I was quoting, if I had more time, it would have been shorter in a letter to someone. And I was completely wrong about who it was. And I had to keep going back farther and farther and farther. And I believe it was Blaise Pascal. But I mean, hundreds of years of other people sort of using that phrase often And it took me a while to get back to the root before I actually put it in writing.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I mean, there are cases where I think maybe somebody uses it and realizes that people are going to think I made this up. But in many cases, I think people just don't remember where they heard it or where they read it. And because in my master's thesis, there's a mistake because I attributed a quote to somebody. And I found out shortly after I turned it in that it was really said by somebody else, but it was too late to change it. So it's still there.
I think the important thing with those is that you don't claim you came up with it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
If you're crediting the wrong person who's not you,
yeah.
It's less bad.
Yeah. So, who is Brad Meltzer, author and TV host?
You know, I've been looking at his picture, trying to place it, and I'm sure all kinds of people listening at home are screaming out the answer, and it's just not coming through to my head. Do you want me to read that one?
Yes, please.
All right. So Brad Meltzer has a point to ponder. We are all ordinary. We are all boring. We are all spectacular. We are all shy. We are all bold. We are all heroes. We are all helpless. It just depends on the day.
And P.J. O'Rourke on page 22, everybody knows who that is, the writer.
Yes.
I'll read this one. I guess the editors put a title here, a little help here. He's quoted as saying, everybody wants to save the earth. Nobody wants to help mom with the dishes. And I guess that's true.
It is one of those micro and macro realities, yes.
A friend of mine told me years ago that her mother would always insist that she dry the dishes. Her mother would wash the dishes in the sink, and then Lynn would dry them. And she said she hated that, and she didn't understand why her mother insisted on her doing it. She said, well, the dishes will dry by themselves if you put them on the rack. Why do I have to stand here and dry them? And she said, well, years later, she realized, I don't know if her mother, I guess her mother told her, the reason she did that, she just wanted her company.
Oh, I've definitely done that.
And she said to me, she said, well, why didn't you just tell me that? Then I would have understood why you were putting me, you know, making me do this.
As someone who is completely and totally inept at cooking, I am a fantastic dishwasher. That is how I earn my keep. But I have absolutely done that. I've said, oh, why don't you dry these dishes just to have somebody entertain me? So that's a lifelong secret from generations.
Or maybe you just have a small dish drying rack and you actually need to dry the dishes after a big meal.
Mm-hmm. There's a practical reason as well.
Let's go over to page 31. Another of my favorite sections, laughter, the best medicine. I could swear that it used to be called laughter is the best medicine, but the more I think about it, I probably just have heard that said so many times. So, laughter is the best medicine.
They did keep the definite article here.
Well, yeah, because it wouldn't make sense if they said laughter best medicine. But if I need help, I'll call the police. I won't call police. And I try to play the piano. I guess I'm too old to play house. But anyway, somebody named Alana Bennett wrote in something here. Would somebody read that?
She said, whoever decided how much space should exist between tables in restaurants and cafes has so obviously never met a butt before.
Yeah, I've often thought about that, too. I guess they just, you know, trying to crowd as many people, as many customers in as they can so they can make more money.
Definitely.
Yeah. Comics of the world unite. If Karl Marx were still alive, he would be 200 years young. Since few men in history could have benefited more from a sense of humor, we collected these jokes in his honor.
How did we know communism was doomed from the beginning? All the red flags.
That one I'm going to keep in my back pocket. What's the difference between capitalism and socialism? In a capitalist society, man exploits man. And in a socialist one, it's the other way around.
Is that the...
Do you want to take the secret police there, Joseph?
Sure. A frightened man goes to the secret police and says, "My talking parrot disappeared. Why did you come here? Go to the regular police." "I will. I'm just here to tell you that I disagree with whatever the parrot is going to say." I really like this one. A salesperson stops by to see one of his business customers. Not a soul is in the office except a beagle emptying waste baskets. "I'll be finished in a few minutes," the beagle says. "Incredible," exclaims the man. "Does your boss know what a prize he has in you? An animal that can talk." Alarmed, the beagle drops the wastebasket. "No, don't tell him," he pleads. "If he finds out I can talk, he'll make me answer the phones, too."
On page 39, would one of you tell us the rule one of biology sent in by Susan Few of Little Rock, Arkansas, rule one of biology?
Well, Susan Few teaches us a real serious rule of biology here. She says, "It is a proven fact that if your parents don't have kids, neither will you."
Really? If we go over to page 55, the Christian Science Monitor talks about a fine plan.
It's hard enough to get kids to put down their phones and read, so why fine them for a late library book? In fact, some library systems now charge tardy adults only. Others have eliminated fees for everyone. In Los Angeles and San Jose, kids earn a $5 credit toward their late fees for time spent reading in the library. All they have to do is read a book or magazine, or even a comic book. Not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, I agree.
I once learned the wrong lesson, since when I was in eighth grade, I checked out actually a volume of Shaw's plays, and I returned it quite late and racked up some, what at the time seemed like a large sum, but I'm sure it was, $10 or something, if not less than that. And so I avoided the library for years and years and years.
Oh, no.
to avoid this fine. And then when I finally, I think I was probably about 21, I finally decided, you know what, I'm an adult, I'm going to go settle my accounts. And I went and showed up and said, like, all right, I need to pay this fine. And at that point, I had been completely deleted from their system. It had been so long. So they had no record of it at all. So I did not have to pay the fine, which when I told my father, he thought it was the wrong lesson to learn.
Oh, yeah.
If you avoid responsibility long enough, everything works out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One summer in elementary school, so when I was growing up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, I could walk to the library and I could walk to church and I could walk to an ice cream part, the Woolworth's lunch counter I could walk to. And one summer, there was a very cute teenage boy who worked at the library, and I went every day. And that was the year that I read every single, they had all these really interesting international folktale books. So it would be like folktales from Lithuania, folktales from whatever. So every day I would go take one, I'd read the whole thing, and then I'd be back the next day to see this very handsome 15-year-old boy. And I read, truly shelves of books that summer. And it was, whatever your motivation is, reading is good for you. So more libraries should put attractive young people in the kids section.
How old were you then?
Like 8.
Oh.
Every day I went to that library.
So that's why you were actually able to read the books.
Oh.
If you'd been 18, you might not have read the books.
If I had been 18, I think I would have played that one differently. But at 8, I was just working on my game.
Yeah. On page 61, there's a section here called Survive Anything. This is actually a cover story in this issue. And I know a lot of people have made the mistake of referring to a woman's pregnancy and then finding out that she wasn't pregnant. So could one of you tell us about this?
So in Survive Anything, the cover story in May of 2019, they say, a situation to survive, asking a woman when she's due and discovering, and this is in all caps, she's not pregnant. Say you're sorry, be sincere about it, and most important, move on. Continuing to apologize or ramble only makes it worse. Now remember this, never, ever utter the word pregnant unless a woman brings it up first. Even if you think it, know it. Even if she looks like she's about to give birth today. Say nothing unless she mentions it, says Diane Gottsman, owner of the Protocol School of Texas, which sounds like a very chill place to learn manners. I'm sure everyone there is very calm.
Now, I won't condemn you if you are completely ignorant of what I'm going to tell you because you are much younger than I am. But have you ever heard of Moms Mabley?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm shocked. Oh.
I have not. I have to.
You have not. Well, if you had said yes, I would just assume that there has to have been some special occasion in which you heard of her. You know, maybe your grandfather said something about her or something. But she was dubbed the funniest woman in the world, Moms Mabley, Jackie Moms Mabley. She used to come on the Ed Sullivan show. Of course, until Ed Sullivan started having her on his show, and she was so popular, he would have her on fairly regularly. But she played nightclubs, and I bought all her albums. And, of course, there were so many things that she said on those albums. There was Moms Mabley at the White House, Moms Mabley at the Geneva Conference, Moms Mabley at the Playboy Club. Mm-hmm. And some of them would be Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3. And there were things that she said in those that she could never have said on television. But Moms Mabley, there was one joke that she told. She said she was in a plane. She hated to fly. She said her ears were stopped up. She said she was suffering. She wanted to die. And she called the stewardess. She said, help me. Give me something to my ears are just stopped. My ears are popping and I'm going to die. And so the hostess finally said, Mom, drop your jaws.
Oh, no.
And Mom says, and I misunderstood her. And she said, I caught my death of cold.
You know, I had heard of her probably because of the Ed Sullivan show, which my mom was a big fan of when she was younger. But she gets a few mentions in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Prime. So I think there probably are some people who are at least hearing the name because she gets a mention, at least one, if not more than that, on Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah. And a famous female comedian, not a black woman, I can't remember her name right now, actually produced, or was it Whoopi? It may have been Whoopi Goldberg, I'm not sure. But anyway, a few years ago, produced a documentary on Moms Mabley.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. I'll have to check
and,
it out.
And so it's worth taking a look at. Anyway, that was going to be the introduction to Clogged Ears on a Flight in the same section on the cover story, Survive Anything. But I don't think we have enough time for it. So so anyway, that's the Reader's Digest. And actually, I was just talking to our news director, and she said, well, why don't you reach out to them and see what happens? I was thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get the Reader's Digest to underwrite this program?
Oh, certainly. We could get the publicity out. Well, when you were saying that, the young woman you were talking to had never heard of it.
Yeah.
I thought that Reader's Digest version was still an expression that was in the vernacular. So, for example, somebody might not know where it came from, but to say, oh, quick, I only have a few minutes, give me the Reader's Digest version, I thought that was still an expression that was out there.
No, I mean I'm not even familiar with that expression
really?
Myself.
It means give me the short version.
Yeah, I mean I understand it, right. but I'd never heard it said that, you know. Like
or
that.
Better yet, my friend Cindy used to say, "Give me the PG-13 version." There are people around. She'd say, "I'll give you the R later." It's fine.
Well, we have 12 seconds left, so I'm just going to say thank you, Annie J of Madison Shakespeare Company, for being with us again. And thank you, Joseph Logan Bear. I have to look at my paper to make sure I get your name right. And I want to ask you, I was going to ask you on the air, but I'll ask you afterwards, something about your name. So I hope both of you will join us again soon. And I hope all of you that are listening to us will join us again next week when our guest will be Erica Monroe Kane, the director of the Wisconsin Academy. And we'll see you again next Thursday at the same time. Good night.
You've been listening to Radio Literature, a weekly program on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. We are listener-sponsored community radio. Join us again next Thursday at 7:30 for more features of local, national, and international interest. Salon Piano Series continues its 10th anniversary season with a concert by Shai Wozner on Sunday, April 21st at 4 p.m. at Farley's House of Pianos. Wozner is committed to a broad range of innovative programming and recognized for exceptional insight in his playing and performance. His concert program will include works by Purcell, Chopin, Beethoven, Harbison, and Schumann. More information is at salonpianoseries.org. The Salon Piano Series continues its 10th anniversary season with a concert by Shai Wozner on Sunday, April 21st, 4 p.m. at Farley's House of Pianos, 6522 Siebold Road in Madison. Live music lives at WORT Madison.